Pitch Invasion Season 2, Take 2. And just like that, we're back on air. Thank you so much for joining us yet again as we have a look at what the latest is in the local football as well as international football, international meaning European mostly. But we're going to start with South African football, where the Absa Premiership made its welcome return over the past weekend. 20 goals later, we are into round one. And I saw a stat, I think, over the weekend that it hasn't been since, I think, late 2000s, if I'm not mistaken, where all of Chiefs, Pirates, Sundowns won in one weekend, which is absolutely fantastic. And perhaps that's is going to tell us a bit more about what we can expect from all those teams, including the likes of Wits as well, as they look to take the title away from Mamelodi Sundowns. But before we go too deep, let's quickly remind you, my name is Lwazi Zikubu.
Olo Makwaza coming in, studs up. They have your shin pads on.
Well, Emeka Inyadike, very quiet today.
I wonder why.
You are listening to the Pitch Invasion Podcast, the podcast for football tribalists.
I wonder why. We'll touch on like the reasons.
Like your club's transfer.
The reasons why Emeka is so quiet today. But yes, let's start with the Absa Premiership. 20 goals scored. I guess it started the way we would have wanted to. Ola, Mamelodi Sundowns against SuperSport United. They still call it a derby. It really isn't anymore, is it? Because Sundowns has just really just brushed aside SuperSport United over the past couple of seasons.
But isn't that sad, though? That, I mean, we're talking about two clubs that have won, I think, arguably the most titles in the last Premier League, PSL titles in the last 10, 15 years. Yeah. So that game, you know, in itself should sell itself. However, I must say the stadium was quite packed.
Yeah, it was,
you know, in the beginning it was quite slow. I was wondering where the fans were.
It was Sundowns fans.
Yeah, which is good.
Which is good. With the SuperSport United fans on the other side. There's probably 50.
No, which is good. But I mean, you know, that's what you want to see in South African football. So that's a great start, great advertisement. And I must give the Sundowns players credit. I mean, they played their some of their AFCON Bafana players, you know, in the starting lineup. And I was thinking, excuse me, some of these guys, you know, have hardly had any rest, you know, and they still look so sharp and so fit. So
I don't think the guys want to rest. I think, you know, the one thing I can take
but
from
they this, have to. For, I mean, they're back in CAF again.
From this weekend, watching the PSL Cup game this weekend, you could see that the players couldn't wait for the league to start again. And I think to a large extent, the current Black Label Cup kind of gave the other players, you know, this motivation that you know, come on, let's get going. You know, typically with the Black Label Cup, you get a lot of, you know, sometimes games end up in draw or they're not really exciting. But this one between Chiefs and Pirates was so intense that it seemed as if everybody else wanted to get in on the party. And so, you know, even I mean, Kaiser Chiefs, the way they came, they turned that game around, shows that we're going to have a very, very, very good season.
We'll touch on Chiefs in a bit. There's something that, you know, I don't think a lot of people have had a lot to say about with SuperSport United. The acquisition of Gabuza. I'm not sure which other sort of top six or maybe top eight side in South African football would have bought a 30-something-year-old Gabuza from Orlando Pirates. What did you make of that signing? In terms of what does it tell you about their ambition?
Well, somehow SuperSport United has a way of finding space in their team for, you know, players from the other big clubs.
Yeah.
You know, that sometimes you think they are out of it. I mean, they got Yeye and he came in and did a job for them. So, you know, I would say, you know, Gabuza on a good day can give you something. But, you know, how many of those good days, you know, I wasn't too impressed.
Yeah.
You know, you took the words right out of my mouth. You know, it's a very SuperSport United move that, you know, very SuperSport United. But, you know what, I think maybe they looked at it this way and they thought, look, there's something that this guy, you know, maybe a different environment, a different scenery can give. Because remember, this guy is a Bafana striker.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, he hasn't retired. So, you know, you're still, you have an international player, and I think maybe he just needed
a
change of scenery.
And Shabalala is a Bafana player.
He actually played quite well against. He was disruptive. He made the defense, you know, think one, you know, on one or two occasions. And I think there's something that I can see why they would have acquired him. It reminds me almost, if I can take it to England when Chelsea got Giroud. Mm. You can see the logic there with the guy in the air, a guy that's hard, you know, to tackle. And he's always demanding the attention of two defenders.
So with him and Hrobler,
and that's why
front?
Hrobler was. I mean, you saw Hrobler got a lot of free breaks because of the attention that Kabuza drew from the defenders. Yeah. So I think I can see the method to their madness there, but highlight the word madness, right? Because I'm still not sure who signed Kabuza, but I can see why they've signed him.
Okay, all right. We'll keep a close eye on SuperSport United and that partnership at the top there, Kabuza and Hrobler, and just how much trouble they're going to cause the other teams in South Africa's top flight. But from the Tshwane Derby, we saw Orlando Pirates in action later on that day as well, and I guess impressive is the word to use once again. But I think, you know, the most difficult job this time for Mitro, which has probably been his job since he came back to Pirates, has just been managing expectation, because this time it's going to be even more difficult. The squad he's got, the quality of performance they put in, and just the way that they've started the season, literally just saying we are still very much at that same level we ended last season with.
I think that's the most interesting thing about Pirates is the fact that, you know, over the last two seasons, we've seen them almost kind of finish strong.
Yeah.
But it looks like somehow they've kind of realized that if they don't have an early start on Sundowns, playing catch-up will be difficult for them. Yeah. And, you know, my worry is just how they manage some of the games they play against some teams that you expect them to win. But, you know, Mitchell is very grounded. And to that extent, I think he's very motivated to try and get something out of this league this season. So it'll be, you know, I have a very strong feeling, and I did say last week that I thought Pirates look like a team that could win the PSL this season.
You know what it looks like to me, or like they are obviously they still have CAF Champions League commitments coming up, but we all know what happens when you do start playing CAF Champions League if you haven't attended properly to your league form. If you're going to play CAF Champions League football and still try and be as competitive as you possibly can in the league, that's very difficult. So it looks like Pirates are saying to themselves, let's pick up as many points as we possibly can before we start our CAF Champions League, because I'm looking at the squad that they've assembled this time around. It looks as if they're going to be even more serious about the CAF Champions League than they were last season.
I think the other thing that surprised me about you know, just to touch on the game on the weekend, was no Loach, you know, and I don't know if that has to do with maybe somebody in Europe said, hey guys, you know, before you, can we just do a medical on the side, you know, and well, see
there,
this
there
guy.
There are rumors of him.
You know what I mean? I heard rumors about that, you know, so.
It's quite possible. I mean, for me, I'll be very surprised if he doesn't. I mean, you made a bet that if he's not here at the end of the year.
No, Christmas.
Which means if he leaves now, you've lost the bet.
No, I said if he's still here by Christmas. I'm still in good. Okay. I'm still good with that.
I hope he leaves.
No, I hope he leaves.
Because it kind of reminds me of my conversation with Senzo just before he got shot. You know, where I just felt that he was wasting his time here. You know, because, I mean, he had like a very, very incredible two seasons.
Yeah.
And at that point in time, you know, this was October of 2014. And, you know, and I said to him, look, I don't know who your agent is. And I also don't think the club will stand in your way. But, you know, when you hit this level, surely you've got to aim for something.
And that's where Loach is right now. Yeah. And I mean, you know, looking at Pirates, you know, the bigger picture, I think, you know, they've assembled a squad that, you know, it looks like they mean business on all fronts. Because, I mean, it was a lean year as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So as much as they're playing well, you know, you still want some sort of silverware to justify, you know, the way they've been playing and the signings they've made and so forth. So I think this year, Mitro has to at least get one trophy. You know what I mean? If, okay, the league, you know, we can decide that, you know, later on next year. But in the interim, I mean, there's the MTN 8 coming, there's the Telkom knockout coming. There are trophies, you know, available where Mitro can
got, quickly. They got to the finals. unfortunately, they've got to win now. They came up against, if I remember correctly,
sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. He's now in that same position that Klopp was in at Liverpool, where okay, the first 2 years, the teething phases, okay, you were building slowly. Now
I didn't want to say it. If I said what you said just now, you would have had a go at me.
So I think Mitra right now is in that position where Pirates have to win.
I was gonna say, if I remember correctly, both you guys got your predictions wrong for that final. Both went for Pirates against Baroka.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a reminder.
As a Pirates fan, there was one thing that still concerned me, despite the 3-1 win, was the fact that Pirates, from last season, the issue we had was that, you know, Pirates would either score early or would score the first goal. And then they would have this lull in the game where they would just switch off and they'd fall asleep. And that happened so many times. And one of the biggest times where that happened was against Cape Town City. Where they eventually were down, took, you know, the game by its horns, and then they led. And then they went on this tremendous lull and everybody just sort of shut down. They conceded.
I want to give credit to Celtic for that, because they could have easily folded as well. Because they were under a lot of pressure, but they didn't. And they actually contributed to a great game of football at the Orlando Stadium, Celtic, away from home. So I'm going to turn it around and I'm going to say that John Maduka and his coaching staff, they did a fantastic job.
How good is it to see John Maduka, guys?
It's brilliant, man.
Do you know what I mean? Can we give that man a clap, please?
He was a fantastic player, and now he's coaching. For me, one of the all-time greats for the PSL, and it's great to see him. Coach, by the way, his last name Maduka is Nigerian.
What that has to do with his coaching ability, God knows, but I have no idea how we got there.
I suspect his father probably went to play an away game there.
And what, just adopted the surname?
We don't know if he has any connection with Nigeria, but that name is, there's an Igbo version of it, spelled the same
way. What happens on away games stays on away games. But a good, fantastic performance as well from Pirates, Sundowns we've mentioned. But another team that I guess maybe we're not too surprised anymore about how they started was Bidvest Wits. And they went to a very difficult place to go to over the last couple of months, about 18 months. The Kings Olitini Stadium has become a bit of a fortress for AmaZulu. But the way that Wits made it look rather simple, I saw Kevin Johnson was extremely annoyed by his side's performance, but at the same time, the students were there and they did the job.
Yeah, someone said over the weekend on one of the forums that, Gavin Hunt is going to come with his textbook kind of football, and that's how he wants to coach Bafana. with Hunt, you know that he's always organized and result-oriented, so... You know, I wasn't too surprised with how they've started, because Wits, I think, went off the boil, at a point when you thought that they were going to be able to.
You can count maybe 3 games last season where they actually lost the league.
Yes,
you
know? Even one of it was against Sundowns.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it's great that they started. So at least we've got almost like a marker for the season. And they're playing midweek already. So,
are you saying Kaiser Chiefs are in the title race?
I haven't said anything. I'm just saying that somehow we have to wait and see.
Are you saying they're not?
You know what? If history is anything to go by,
yeah.
Let me leave it at that.
But what history, my friend?
Can I just say something?
Is it recent history or? All time history.
Let's just say recent history.
Okay.
Right, recent history.
Okay. That's not history.
No, but I think with Wits, the one thing you have to appreciate with Gavin Hunt is that the guy always, like you said, Amika, there's a professional performance he always demands of his team. Mm. And, you know, it's funny you touched on, you know, Bafana there for a second. And, you know, when I think about it, there's a phrase that I like, and it goes, if you want something you've never had before, you have to do something you've never done before. Mm. And I think if Bafana want something they've never had before, they want, you know, or let's just say they want that success that they once had and they haven't had in a long time. You look at the Bafana teams of old, they were professionals, man. Mm. You know what I mean? Those guys were the Lucases, the Bradley Cornells, the Andre Orances, the Bartlets, the Bennies, the,
The fish.
I can go back, you know, decades. We had guys.
Stop talking about Bafana like it's some team that's 100 years old.
No, but in terms of the success, I mean, that success feels like 100 years old if you're a Bafana fan.
That's
the
true.
Last really great run that Bafana had where we were formidable worldwide was in that 2002 World Cup. Mm. That's 17 years ago.
I thought they were unlucky in 2000 when they came up against Nigeria in the semifinals.
No, they were unlucky.
I thought that was, for me, of all the AFCON teams they've had, that was the strongest team.
Now you're telling me Gavin Hunt cannot replicate that with what you see at Wits.
I've always felt that if there's anybody who won two things, South Africa, for South Africa to succeed, we need to have a South African coach. That's my first and foremost.
Yeah.
And amongst all the coaches, I think that Gavin Hunt is the one guy who has managed to do it with so many different clubs in South Africa. You know, people forget how good he was with Black Leopards, with Swallows,
Super Sport.
Before going, I'm saying with Swallows, he was also very good. And then you know, with Super Sport, you know, back-to-back titles, people will say, okay, no, but the team, but he had them playing in a particular professional way. And then for him to achieve what he's achieved with Wits, it says something that he understands the psychology of the South African player and how to manage all of that, you know, how would I put it now, all of the fantasy that they try and put into their game and try and make them more pragmatic. Mm. I think that, you know, this is probably the best time
And you know what's also interesting on the coaching front is that him and Bizzo and Gordon Eagleson are tied, I think, on 4 league titles.
Yes.
And
the other two have had their chance.
And now you're looking at him and Bizzo are on 4 league titles. And, you know, both their teams start with, you know, pretty comprehensive wins. So that's another sort of, you know, extra title, if I can say, on top of the league title for the clubs. Because whoever wins between the two here
goes to 5.
Outright puts himself, you know, as the best South African coach of all time, and you cannot argue with that. Although Bizzo, I think Bizzo will have that edge right now over Gavin because of the CAF Champions League. Mm. And I think that obviously will take you above, you know, almost anything any local coach can do. But Gavin's body of work cannot be denied.
No, it absolutely cannot be denied. And I guess those two teams, you were talking about contenders, those two teams will be in the running. Will be in the running, rather, alongside Pirates. Who the fourth team in that picture is? We don't know. Cape Town City, they couldn't win. Chiefs, they got their victory, but it was a really difficult one. And I think they're just going to be happy with the 3 points. If you are Chiefs at the moment, be happy with the 3 points, because as much as Highlands Park is Highlands Park and cannot compare to Chiefs in terms of you know, what they've achieved, Highlands Park are a top 8 side from last season, and the Makulong Stadium
is a fortress,
an absolute fortress. So listen, whichever way it happened, take your 3-2 victory and go home. And also, I think you look at one or two of the new signings that Chiefs made and the impact that they had on the game, and perhaps, you know, it's not going to be as, again, I'm a Chiefs fan, so I don't want to get my hopes, you know, up too soon, but
they got a good result, which you know, compared to last season, is a good start.
Mm.
And for me, what was impressive was they led, and then they had to come from behind.
Yeah.
So you know, it's a result that does them a lot of good.
I think the other thing with Chiefs that went amiss was the fact that finally Manyama's back.
Mm.
Right. Put the goals aside. This was their main guy. This was their signing, you know, along with Billiard, that was going to take Chief to the next level. And he got injured and he missed a lot of the season.
Mm.
And you can see that this guy, not only does he provide creativity in the midfield, but he brings goals as well.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm thinking about the games that Chiefs drew.
He's a leader.
Where, you know, his presence could have probably, you know, broken the deadlock. Or
you talk about Billiard, should he stay? You know, he needs someone else to help him in terms of the creative.
He does.
You know, because we saw too many times last season where it was literally either Billiard or no one else at Kaizer Chiefs. So to have Manyama, you know, play the way that he did, to have him back in form, back in full fitness, you know, should be a good thing for Kaizer Chiefs.
He played a very good game, I think. You know, more than deserved his man of the match in that game.
Another individual that we saw back in the mix in that game was Molomo Wandao Matola.
Tower.
We haven't seen him in a long time. He came back. He scored the winner.
Sharp. He looked sharp. He looked good. He looked strong.
He did look
everything
very
you want
sharp.
From a centre back.
And you know what? It makes me ask the question from a Kaizer Chiefs recruitment point of view. There is countless players that were recruited between the start of last season and now, and those same players have been now shown the exit door. The latest being, is it Mario Boysen?
I think, yeah, he was also shown the door.
He was literally as a centre back. He came in, he started a couple of games. As Matoho in that situation, you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is probably the end days then clearly for me at Chiefs. And he spent the whole of last season really playing second fiddle to a number of centre backs. Comes in, first game, hits the ground running. That's what you want to see from an experienced defender.
Although that goal looked like an own goal.
It was. But the fact that the center back was in that position to chest it and fire using his weaker foot.
With his weaker foot.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, you got to give Tua some credit. I think that, you know, for me, I think between him and Tyson, they are, for me, the best two centre backs we've had in this league in a very long while. It's just sometimes, you know, these players kind of lose their way.
So,
it was good to see him at least get something out of that game, which will give him a lot of confidence.
Yeah, it certainly will. But I think before we move on from Chiefs, the one thing that they do need to make sure happens in the next maybe 2 weeks or so, get Itumeleng Khune back as quickly as possible, because Bruce Wuma is still young, is still wet behind the ears.
Could you blame him for some of the
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But it's just commanding your defense, commanding your defenders, which is why perhaps I think for Matoho that the task has become that much, demanding, because he's the most experienced of that back four. He's got an inexperienced goalkeeper behind him. Mphahlele wasn't playing. It was Reef Frosler, who is, you know, an under-23 player. So Of in that back four, he's now the most experienced again. So he needs to lead. Khune needs to come back, lead from the back. And Chiefs, I think, will go back to something similar to what we've seen from them from a defensive point of view. They're a team that is normally very strong at the back, you know, which allows obviously the midfield and the forwards to do their job as well. But before moving on from the Absolute Premiership, we need to grade these four teams we've touched on. Let's start with the defending champions from match one. Out of 10,
I'll give them 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. All right. Pirates.
I'd give Pirates.
Yep.
You know, 7.5 because of that issue that I have. You know, from last season. We fall asleep in the middle of the games and we concede and. That's not good.
Okay, so you're going 7.5.
Sometimes you just want to get a result, man.
Yeah, but sometimes that's why we didn't get the result.
And then Wits?
Wits, solid 9. 3-0 away from home.
I'll go with even 10.
10 from 10.
I'm telling you, because to go there and get that result is...
Yeah. Yeah, cum laude for the students then. Okay. And then finally, Chiefs.
For the win, I'll give them 7.
7.
Yeah, same there. 7.5.
7.5.
Yeah, they grinded that out. I mean, last season, Chiefs either draw or lose that game.
That's true.
And this season, you know, it's a good start for them.
Okay, well, based on those comments you've just made now, Vets are winning the league. That's what my take from it. And we move on. But before we touch on what has clearly now become South Africa's favorite club overseas, Club Rouge, Brilliant Kuzwayo.
That's sad, you know.
So sad.
You know, somebody, a colleague of mine over the weekend, were discussing this, and he was saying that even last year at the, because he was playing a lot of MDC, and, you know, apparently they had concerns about his ankle, saying that he's lost some mobility. And I'm just wondering if, you know, during that process, could, you know, some form of, you know, rehab, op,
surgery,
it's quite rare to find out that an athlete has been, you know, denied a full career because of an ankle injury. Do you know what I mean? I mean, the Achilles turns to be the worst part of your lower foot. But I don't know how severe it is. But, man, I really hope that maybe a year or 2 years could pass. And in that period, some rehab is done. And maybe he can get back to playing again. Because, I mean, let's not... Guys, this is his livelihood.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So... Hey, man, really sorry for Brilliant. And I hope, you know, in that period, he doesn't just say, I've retired. Because there's so many athletes that, you've heard where they've contemplated retiring, and before you know it, they've taken a full 2 years or year or three or so forth. Kaká was the same story where, you know, he thought his career was over, and before you know it, rehab. And okay, he didn't get back to Real Madrid, Kaká, but he still carried on playing. So hopefully Brilliant can do the same.
I hope he, even if he doesn't come back, you know, he's able to find all the, you know, the club can help him find his feet. You know, it's really sad to see someone who for me, you know, epitomized his name as well.
No, he did. He did, yeah. You know, for, and I guess that's maybe the other sad thing about the whole picture is that for a very small period of his career, he was really good. And we wanted to see, you know, more of that. And again, goes back to Senzo as well. For the last 2 years of his career, he was really hitting the high levels before we lost him. So, to Brilliant Khuzwayo, this man, it really is sad, but hopefully there's something off the field for you that lies ahead with any team, maybe coaching, goalkeeper coach, or I saw someone say maybe you should open a goalkeeping academy. You know, whatever it is that lies ahead for you, we wish you.
We could get him here to replace Amika as well.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. It is transfer season, so
he has to learn how to speak Pidgin English.
That is true. That is true. Now, to cast our eyes over the waters that's around our fantastic globe, we've got a man who I guess just continues to not only take his game to the next level, but also just amaze us in terms of, you know, what he is producing. Because I think the most amazing thing is that we've just been watching it over the last 3-4 seasons. And now, Percy Tau is of Club Bruges.
Brighton. Do you guys want to get relegated? No, I think the deal works and get the guy into the Premier League. No, it's simple.
For me, I think, you know, everything works for good. I think he needs to get, just focus on where he is.
Yeah.
And get the job done. You know, he had a honeymoon last season.
Yeah.
Away from the top spotlight, but he actually got attention to himself because of his performances. But Club Bruges, that's a
big deal.
One of the really big powerhouses of Europe.
Probably. I think they're European Cup winners as well, if I'm not mistaken.
No, they.
But they're a powerhouse.
They were a powerhouse. They played. Amokachi played for them. Mm.
Yeah.
In fact, Amokachi scored the first goal in the Champions League. History was playing for Club Bruges.
Oh, okay.
And Club Bruges has also underlined their ambitions this season by signing Samuel Mignolet. So they have a.
I saw a tweet saying that he just wanted to play with Percy Tau.
Well, who wouldn't want to play with Percy Tau? I must say that, you know, overall, I think I was a bit disappointed with Percy at the AFCON. I expected a lot more from him. I think somehow it seemed like the weight was a lot on him, and then also. He couldn't decide whether to affect things in the team or show off.
Mm.
Sometimes I think he tried to overdo it, but he's a young player, and I know that I'm not saying he didn't have a bad tournament. I thought he was a handful for a lot of people, but there was some of his decision making which I thought, you know, perhaps this move will help him a great deal because you know in England, if you're playing for Brighton, he's not going to have a lot of time to dwell on the ball like he does, but in Belgium they will find a way to, especially for playing in the top flight,
they'll
find a way to make him use that, you know, to the team's advantage. So I'm going to try and look for a way to watch some of those games.
I think we all have to.
I was very impressed with how he tried to warm up to the fans.
That's
really, and you know what, I'm going to touch on that for a second. I was impressed with the fact that he pulled the celebration of two. You know, that to me was what I thought.
Are we not going to talk about the actual finish first and foremost?
Now, let me get to the finish, okay. Right? well, let's get to Percy Tau, then finish celebration, then the interaction with the fans. Look, I said this over and over. This is, for me, pound for pound. In the last decades, African football, this is the best player, you know, I've seen. Yeah. And it's evident
better than Vilagazi, player of the season winning Vilagazi?
Better.
No, I mean, better. For me, I rate Percy higher than
but, yeah. You know what the thing is with Percy? He's complete.
Yeah.
Right? Not only can he give you an assist, not only can he give you creativity, he can give you goals as well.
Yeah.
And from midfield, right? I know they're now converting him into something like a shadow forward, false nine, or. And the first time.
Percy is crazy. I mean,
the first time I saw that.
On the ball, he is. he's unplayable.
The first time I saw that, I was at Loftus watching Pirates Sundowns. Pirates won that game 3-2. And this is the first time since I'd seen, you know, the false nine being born when Pep played it against Real Madrid, where Pizzo made Percy play every attacking position up front. He played left, he played right, he played up top by himself, he played false nine, he played cam. He literally played every single position. I think he scored one and assisted the other in that 3-2 loss. And that was an indication that we're dealing with somebody that technically he's good. He's not worried about, oh, I can't play on the left side, I can't play on the... That's when you know a guy is really confident, when you can put him wherever and he can still produce the same thing. And I mean, that goal, wow, man. I mean, what a way to introduce yourself to your new team. And I think that touch that Percy put when he was trying to interact with the fans is something that I think has been amiss from South African players growing abroad. Some,
that's very true.
Not all. Is that, I mean, you've got to understand there's a huge cultural difference, right, when you leave South Africa and you go to Europe, okay? Here, we look at each other, we're walking in the corridor. It's automatic. Hey, hi. Do you know what I mean? Hey, how's it? Do you know what I mean? It's automatic. Do you know what I mean? As African people, that Ubuntu in us, where you're walking past somebody, you have to greet that person. In Europe, nobody greets you when you walk past them. Do you know what I mean? So there's that and so many other small minutiae like detail that can derail a South African player from not adapting and adjusting.
He had his teammates whispering into his ears. And he, you know, it was quite funny to see how he connected with the fans.
And part of that means that you have to get, you know, drop whatever, you know, biases you may think of, you know, wherever you're going.
Yeah.
Put your prejudices aside and just open up. And you might have to come out of your comfort zone as a person. Because as African people that always go abroad, specifically our players, right, our football players, they're introverts. I've heard a few agents tell me quite a few times that part of the problem with African players, why they don't adapt overseas, because they're introverts. You know, they don't go out and embrace the communities. They don't go out and adopt the lifestyle and the culture. And Percy is, I think somebody must have told him that, Percy, to survive here, you've got to do that.
Yeah.
And he's doing that and he's trying. And I think that's why we might not see this guy back in the country until he's like 34, 35. He might be another... I mean, Macbeth Sibai, for God's sake, guys, played many years in Russia. Do you know what I mean? You cannot tell me that guy didn't adapt and, you know, do certain things to fit in.
No, but I mean, look, I'd be very surprised if he does come back before he's 32, come back to this country, because the fact that
SuperSport will sign him.
The fact that Bruges went, you know, they really wrapped up the deal so quickly tells you that they had been watching him.
No, they had been watching him.
And then probably not the only team that you know, had been watching him, because we know that in France, you know, there were in Liga, there were some teams that were also lining up.
There were four teams. I think Saint-Etienne was one of them, if I'm not mistaken.
To try and get his signature. So, you know, all the best to Percy, because at the moment, he really does have the world at his feet. And it's, from a South African point of view, I have to say, it is wonderful to watch. We cannot wait to see exactly what it is that he'll be getting up to at Bruges. And, of course, there's Champions League football for him as well that is on the cards, should they do the right thing and qualify through the qualifying rounds. But moving on to England now, where we got a first taste, Emeka, of what we can expect this season. And I have to say, the way that the FA Community Shield was played, the level at which both teams really threw everything at each other, it was fantastic to watch.
I must say that it's a long time I saw a Community Shield game that was that competitive.
Yeah.
At the point, they were kicking each other.
It was remarkable.
Know? Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, you know, yes, they had the benefit of having to make six substitutions each and all that, but take nothing away from the game.
Yeah.
It tells us that this season is going to be another battle between both sides.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking to myself, if you're Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea, United, you look at that level, and I'm not sure if either of those four teams can match.
First half? It seemed like City had some kind of edge.
Yeah.
And maybe they were probably further in their...
Chief Sterling should have scored at least four or five goals in that game.
But then in the second half, you know, City panting, and most of that could have had a hat-trick.
Yeah.
He was denied by the post twice, I think.
Yes, and then not only that, towards the end, he heads the ball into the net and...
Kyle Walker does things,
you know, pulls it out.
They say in boxing, styles make fights. And it was interesting for me because you actually saw two different styles, not just in approach, but in the players. And you look at the Man City players, a lot of ability, right? Very, if I could use the word, sexy players. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? The Sanés, the Sterlings,
the football, not the Agüeros.
Yeah, the football.
Okay, course, just,
right?
Make sure.
just to make that clear, right? And a lot of finesse. And then you look on the other hand with Liverpool, very blue collar, hardworking. Nobody's doing step overs. Mm. Everybody's just doing the right thing at the right time. Yeah. So it's interesting when you see those styles of play.
What was weird was it reminds
me of the Arsenal United Liverpool of back in the day.
Coming from two centre backs.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, it just tells you how much commitment.
Yeah, it's a grind. Everybody, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like with Liverpool, it's very blue collar. There's no player at Liverpool that aesthetically you could which say is pleasing to watch.
Which is,
do you know what I mean? Even, there's no like a David Silva type. Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? There's even no Sterling or Mahrez or Sané type player.
Which is why all of the talk about Coutinho coming back there, you know,
could probably offset things, you know?
Yeah, because I mean, the team got much better without him. You know, so even when people talk about, oh no, they probably need some kind of creative, but they find a way to play.
What was extremely you know, good to see, I guess as a football fan more than anything else, because listen, I loathe Liverpool, but what was really good to see was, I think the Champions League win has, I mean, yes, Liverpool had the confidence. You've had the confidence for about two seasons.
Yeah.
But the Champions League win has given Liverpool so much more of that. That, you know, and I think this is probably Klopp's biggest legacy. Yes, Champions League and I guess getting Liverpool back to the level where they think they belong. Is that he's against Manchester City, this all-conquering Manchester City of the last three to four seasons. Liverpool have matched them. That's exactly why I'm saying is that
it's that contrasting styles. And I must be honest, guys, I have to take my hat off to Klopp here, because over the last 5 to 7 years, and I think this is where you also have to give Pep praise, is that everybody has tried to catch up to Pep in the style of play. That you could argue that tiki-taka style of Barcelona play with the build-up from the back, you know, the quick passing and, you know, having midfielders all over the place. And everybody's tried to, you know, sort of catch up with that. And in comes Klopp. And even when you look at his Dortmund side, do you know what I mean? There were no, again, I'm going to use that word, no six. I mean, Lewandowski is a great striker, but he doesn't have that aesthetic appeal of a striker running down, doing crazy step overs, you know, turns and so forth.
They had Yuri Sahin and Kagawa.
Kagawa,
to a large extent. Blaszczykowski
and all those guys. Yeah. And so you look
PC
at
check,
you look at how Klopp has looked at football and thought, hang on a sec, I see things differently.
Yeah.
And I think that could be the new blueprint going forward, because I now look at teams like Barcelona, teams like Real Madrid, where, you know, for the last decade they've enjoyed, you know, that sort of a run where they've been playing with the big names, the eye-pleasing players. And in comes a Liverpool who come with a totally different style of play, totally new game book. And I think that could be the new style of play going forward.
To beat Barcelona without Salah, without Keita, without Firmino also didn't play that game. You know, there's one thing Klopp has done.
As Firmino, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't. It was only Mane among the three of them in that
game. I'm saying, was Firmino there all season? Like, it's not like he was really missed that game.
Well, I know you're listening to that. I know you're listening to that, but the point that I'm making is that, you know, there's something that we learn about Klopp's methods. And that's why it's about the team. You know, like, you know, in management, there's something we got taught in business school about synergy, where they say, you know, 2 + 2 = 5 and not 4. So it's more like, you know, the what you achieve with the collective being bigger than what you do with individual players.
That reminds me. It reminds me, if you look at the last three English sides to win the Champions League, United in 2008.
Yeah, and then Chelsea.
Chelsea 2012. Liverpool. In those victories, and again, just to back up your point, in each of those victories, none of those three teams dominated that final.
Yeah.
It was all team. It was all teamwork. Chelsea 2012, I don't even want to talk about how poor a side they were, but they were, you know, you have to break us down. Liverpool last year, I mean, in terms of ability, they probably are better than Spurs, but in that final, it was a drab contest because, you know, Liverpool, I think they had perhaps given their all in the same in the second leg, but they still managed to win it. So I think that blueprint
they got a goal. For the most part, they didn't try to dominate Spurs, but they had control. Like each time Spurs had the ball in their own half, no problem. But once they crossed into their own half, they had it, and you know, quite rightly got a second goal.
I think that is the blueprint that English sides anyway have contributed to European football over the last.
You can go back even in the era where you had Liverpool, Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa, all of those games. You know, fair enough. In the last couple of years, we used to have ESPN Classics. Mm. So some of those games were reruns.
Yeah.
And you find that even on YouTube, you find some of those games. This was the hallmark, and which gave them a massive dominance. Yeah. What has happened is that in the last few years now, with all of these European coaches coming in, the English teams have tried to become, you know, a bit more fancy in the way they play. And you see how Man City struggles when they play in Europe because, you know, you try and play fancy and you come up against Shakhtar Donetsk or some of those teams that give you help.
Just to touch on that, that is an interesting point. I just want to, you know, piggyback on that. This is why I keep telling people why the English Premier League is the best league in the world. Because let's face it, all the best players want to go there and all the best coaches want to coach there. Forget La Liga because people only want to go to two teams, right? Moise Keane is leaving Juventus to come to Everton. Okay, nobody's leaving Barcelona to go play for Napoli, right? Unless they reject, right? This guy's on the up and he's going to Everton. So there's an intensity that I think English teams have brought back that is difficult for the rest of the world to handle. Mm. And you saw that with Tottenham Hotspur as well. There's a reason why they got to that final. Mm. There's just this relentless intensity that I think
English clubs against Ajax.
I mean, against Ajax, they literally blew them away in the last 10, 15 minutes. Mm. And there's an intensity that, you know, the English league and the English teams bring that the rest of the world can't keep up with.
Yeah.
And that's what they've brought back. And when you look at the England teams of back then, they try to catch up. They try to compete with the world. So
If they were not banned in 85, in 85 after the Heysel disaster, dominance would have carried on.
Probably into the World Cup.
Liverpool were... No, I'm saying in 85.
Mm. Liverpool won
everything.
That English spirit, right? That English way of play would have bled into international events. And I'll tell you why. How? Because you look at the 90s and 2000s England teams, right? Talented players. But they try too hard to try catch up and compete. They line up and they see Brazil and they think, gosh, we need a player like him. Let's bring in a Joe Cole. We need a Sean Wright Phillips. We need...
They did Maradona's one hand of God and then his magic goal to get crashed out in 86. In 90, they got to semifinals. They lost on penalties to Germany. In 96, they got to semifinals also of the Euro. They didn't qualify for 94, but I mean, by 98, they were also very competitive. I just think that you know, they kind of lost their way a bit with all of this influx of foreign talent.
And I mean, you look now, reason why I say it could help the international setup, look how it's helped them in the previous World Cup, right? They went to the semifinals, for God's sake, right?
And
they got to the semifinals with the Maguires. Do you know what I mean? People were talking about Koulibaly being 100 million. Here's Maguire, who just got signed for 80. Mm. I know you talk about Van Dijk. Well, Dutch didn't qualify, but the point that I'm making is that, you know, you had the sort of English players playing an English style with Gareth Southgate, the English of the most English guys, right? Managing that team. And he's brought that English intensity that you see in the Premier League into the national team. And I think that's the way England should go. Mm. going forward if they want international success, as opposed to trying to, you know, catch up to how, ooh, you know, the Dutch are playing 4-3-3 and they're playing, you know, total football. Let's try that. Ooh, you know, you look at Italy, they're playing, you know.
They did well, if you ask me.
Let's try that. They just need to stick to their own identity.
Okay, well, that's a good point. And I think it's a very, you know, a fitting point as we head into the new Premier League season, because we want to see those teams, just like Liverpool and City did over the past weekend, we want to see all the rest of the top six literally just throw hammer and tongs at each other whenever they come up against each other. And I bring that up because before we do close, I would like to try and have, again, another grading of the top six and their pre-season and how it is. Because, I mean, we're a couple of days before the Premier League starts. So up until this point, Emeka, Liverpool and the way they've played, knowing that they got an extended break because of the Champions League win as well, we haven't seen too much of them. But your out of 10, what would you give them?
I think they're still far off. They probably, even in this last game, as good as they looked, I think they didn't get out of second gear. So I would say maybe last two games, because I watched the game in Geneva where they won 3-1 against Lyon.
And came then, from a goal down as well.
Which was crazy, because I think Alisson has already committed 2 clangers for a guy who has too many clean sheets. But I think probably he's still in the holiday.
Too many cupperings.
Because he had a new baby, so he was always carrying the baby. So I'll give them 7.
7 going into the season, match one of the season. Yeah. Okay. Arsenal?
You know what? You'll be shocked by this. I'm giving Arsenal a 9, guys. I mean, we've beaten Bayern Munich along the way.
That's not a shock.
We took Real Madrid to penalties. Damn near should have beaten Barca.
The same Madrid that was being beaten 7-1.
And you got Pepe.
Come on.
Right? So, and we got Pepe. You know, I think Arsenal, you know, there's something
about... Some guy in Nigeria did the Arsenal lineup, put all the names of the signings, and then in defense he put forwards. God will help us.
Look, I'm not that fast with the defense. You know, look, football has always been you need to score more than your opponent,
right.
And we've got somebody that can add to the scoring. Yeah. So, I'd give Arsenal a 9. We've had some great results in preseason, playing against really good.
What do you take from that though, as an Arsenal fan, going into the new season?
A lot of confidence, optimism, especially going. Look, I know the back is still an issue, but I mean, part of my problem with Arsenal was you came into the season, right, you know, where you were sketchy, you know, everything was based on, oh, the way we play, you know, okay, we beat a Malaysia All-Star 11, 5-0, 7-0, and then, you know, come, you know, a really good opponent in the friendlies, and then we get torn apart.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, you see, we're back at it again. But in the we beat Bayern Munich, took Madrid to penalties. Like I said, should have beaten Barca. So the performance is there. And the young players are showing their quality and there's hunger in the side. And I mean, I think the guys now realize, look, they messed up last season and they've come into this season. The objective is clear. It's top 4.
Okay. You know. All right. I'm going to grade United before we touch on Chelsea Spurs very quickly. United, I think, unbeaten, if I'm not mistaken. In pre-season, but I think
didn't they play Solskjaer's friends team in one of the friendlies?
Doesn't matter. It's exactly like the Malaysia whatnot. But look,
I think signing Maguire, you know, makes them and Wan-Bissaka as well. You know, Wan-Bissaka
has been absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant. He doesn't know what the difference between the friendly match and
he's looked really good. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, defensively they've got to look sure and, you know, Lindelof is a good player.
Yeah.
Just probably didn't find the right partner for him. So I think that...
Oh, no, there is no... in the United team of last season, there was no right partner for him. Because Baye was always injured. And then there's nothing right about Smalling and Jones.
So I think that United look like, you know, if Ole can get his methods right, they look good.
There's one or two other players that...
Pogba's head can be in the... Can be out of the cloud. And then, of course, I don't know about Lukaku, whether he's leaving or he's still there.
I think Lukaku's going to leave.
He's going to Inter.
United need to, and I think that's what they're working on now.
I'm shocked. They couldn't get Dybala. It says a lot about United.
No, but look, what he was.
No,
what he was demanding.
But they're paying Sanchez.
Yes, but you don't want to have another Sanchez issue on your, because I think Dybala didn't want to come to play in England. So that's another thing. You're going to have a player who doesn't want to really be there, and he's demanding 350 per week.
And yeah. He wants full control of his image rights.
Yeah, no, it's just too much of a. But hopefully they do get one off.
If Ronaldo doesn't have full control of his image rights.
Well, that's what Dybala wants.
But hopefully one of Eriksen or Fernandes or both do come in before the close of the window. I know that those are the two deals that United are currently.
I think they will get Eriksen because Madrid are hell-bent on Van der Beek.
Yeah.
And Eriksen, you know, he stated that he wants a new challenge.
Yeah.
And I think United is the one. And I think he'll fill in that one Mata void as well. United are not going to get Bruno Fernandes. That's not happening.
Okay.
You might go to Spurs.
According to Paula. But it's okay. So I'll give United an 8 for preseason. And it would be a fantastic coup for them if they keep both De Gea, who is seemingly staying, and Paul Pogba. But quickly, Chelsea out of 10. Quickly.
6.5.
6.5. Christian Pulisic, even with him, 6.5.
6.5.
Okay. Spurs?
Spurs, I'll give them 8.
They look good. They look really good.
Yeah, I'll give them 8.
Okay. So 8 for Spurs. So based on that as well, Chelsea finishing 6th. United 4th.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Okay, that means Arsenal are second.
Which we know is not going to happen. That's a good
guys,
thing.
I'm telling
we know
you,
it's not going to happen.
Liverpool for the title this year.
We're not too sure without any additions. But it's okay. We've got between now and May next year to try and find a reason why we believe which team is going to win. What I can guarantee is that we are bloody excited for the start of the new Premier League season. We've seen what the Absa Premiership can offer as well. And we've got the Super Cup coming up as well in a couple of hours. Chelsea against Liverpool. So one of those will be a Super Champion of Europe by the time we talk again.
And yes, our Fantasy League is coming up. Pitch Invaded's own league. So we'll send out the code as well.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
One last time. I'm Lo Azizi Gugu.
Hola Makwaza.
Yeah, we'll never walk alone. We're getting that title now. Emeka.
Emeka, that's his name. Not we getting the title now. But from all of us here on Pitch Invasion, we'll catch you in 7 days' time, rather. Cheers for now.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977. Or send us a text message starting with #PitchInvasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username Pitch Invaded.